hey, the pizza was really good, but a little expensive. Well, it's, okay, well, it wouldn't be really, really good if it was cheaper.
That was Charles from Hudson and Packard, and it's your boy, Idriff, and you're listening to the What's Good Dough podcast. Whether it's pizza, business, or life, my guests and I are always talking about ways we can level up. Today, you are in for a treat. I met Charles over at the Las Vegas International Pizza Expo, where I judged his competition Detroit-style Hole Mole pizza, and guess what? It scored super high, y'all. So we're going to talk about how that pizza affected his business. We're also going to talk about his amazing story about culinary school, the military, dedication, and really just if you are looking for your next step in life, if you are trying to figure out the next venture, this is one episode that you're going to enjoy. Trust. We also talk finances too, so if you're looking to open up your next brick and mortar or you're looking to open up your first one, this may be the episode for you to kind of get your mind thinking about how much it's going to cost to do that. This is an amazing episode, so sit back, relax, and enjoy the show. And remember to always ask, what's good dough? Welcome to the What's Good Dough podcast, and get ready to level up. But before we continue with the show, I want to introduce you to my two show sponsors, Uni Pizza Ovens and Cordo Olive Oil. Let's start with Uni. They are the number one pizza oven company in the world with the best community there is. Because of their ovens, I have made some of the most amazing pizzas. From round pies to squares, I'm able to get to temperatures of up to 900 degrees, allowing me to cook the pizzas of my dreams. If you're looking to grow your pizza business, buying an Uni makes sense. My past guest, Ryan of Sanctuary Pizza, has a mobile catering company powered by Uni. These powerful ovens are efficient, lightweight, and can be used almost anywhere. Whether you take pizza seriously like me or want to run a pizza operation like Ryan, Uni is the choice for you. Use the link in the show notes and join the Uni community. My second show sponsor is Cordo Olive Oil. At first, I didn't believe that olive oil mattered. It wasn't until I got educated and learned about the difference between commodity oil and Cordo's fresh squeezed olive oil that I ditched the supermarket stuff. Today, I only use Cordo olive oil when it comes to making my dough and even doing a post-bake drizzle. I have even made some amazing pesto with it. Oh my goodness. Cordo's high-quality olive oil does really elevate anything it touches. My buddy Chris, who runs A Slice of New Jersey, just switched over to Cordo. Not only is he getting quality, but he ended up saving money by switching over too. If you're still unsure of the difference, pizza operators can sign up for a free olive oil tasting. Use the link in the show notes to learn more. Thank you for taking the time to listen to my show sponsors and supporting this show. Welcome back to the show, everyone. I am excited to bring on my next guest today. We've met in the past, and I've tried his pizza, and it is amazing, and I can't wait to learn about that and share it with you all. Charlie from Hudson and Packard, welcome to the show. How are you doing?
Good. Hey, thanks for having me on.
Cool, man. Cool. Well, there is one way that I like to start the show. There's no right or wrong answer. What's good, dough?
Man, right now everything is good though. You know, we're just celebrating our 2-year anniversary for the restaurant all month. I know it's National Pizza Month, but right now it's Hudson and Packard Birthday Month. So that's how we're celebrating. And that's about it.
Congratulations. Two years.
Thank you. Yeah.
That's amazing. I wanted to bring you on to the show to talk about your winning Detroit style pizza. Mm-hmm. The Hole Mole, is that right?
Yeah.
Yeah, let's kick things off there and then we'll get into your story later.
Yeah, you know, this past Pizza Expo was our first time out. You know, and I didn't really want to compete, but our front of the house, which is my girlfriend Jasmine, my good buddy in the back, Brandon, they were like, "We're not going to Pizza Expo unless you're gonna throw down a pizza."
Ooh.
So, you know, I just kind of sat down. I was like, what do I want to do? And it wasn't until we went to this Mexican restaurant local to us, and I had their mole negro, enchiladas, and I was like, man, this is like so good. I was like, this would be a dope pizza topping, just the mole. And I was like, how do I want to do it? And I was chit-chatting with the bartender, and he was like, well, have you ever tried duck and mole negro? And I was like, nah, but I'm about to. You know, and that's just kind of how it was born. And when we went to Expo, you know, I thought it was just like a beautiful pizza. It tasted really good. I tested it with a bunch of people. And, you know, that's just the pizza that we came up with.
Damn. And y'all got second place out of the entire pan division. I wanted to ask you, like, did that affect your business at all? Or, you know, did it like jump up and then eventually fade out? Did you get a lot of news press? How did it affect y'all?
I think no one at the time realized how much it was going to affect us.
Really?
Yeah, I mean, like, such a positive light. And I, the whole time, like, I'm super competitive, so I'm sitting there thinking, like, you know, it's just second place, which really doesn't even matter. You don't get a trophy, you don't get a plaque, you get a little bit of cash, but all that really ended up paying for was the cooler to bring onto the airplane. if you've ever done that, that's pretty much what second place pays for, is the cooler. You know, so I don't think at the time when it happened, I definitely didn't realize how it was going to affect our business. And the months after Expo, with the just the amount of press, local, and, you know, we were getting stuff, you know, up in Albany was writing articles, radios in New York City were talking about us. So, I mean, just the months after Pizza Expo, we got hit hard, and it, you know, there were some nights and the end of the weeks where we were all looking at each other like how much more can we take, you know, like how much more can, wow, we even, you know, how much longer can we even sustain this? So it was, from a business owner and business side of things, it was great. You know, Pizza Expo paid for itself.
Was there, other than like the question of can we take this, were there any other downsides to it?
I mean, the only downside was just not being staffed and ready for it. You know, I didn't expect to go in and place top 10, top five, second place, you know. So, you know, we were rolling with the staff that we had pretty much when we opened the place, and, you know, very quickly realized that, you know, we were short in the kitchen, short in front of the house, and it was, you know, basically Jasmine, Brandon, and myself running the entire restaurant. We needed, you know, two or three more of each one of us, you know.
So maybe a good tip for folks listening is that if you win at Expo or any large competition, start that hiring process a little sooner, and before press gets word of it.
Is, yeah, that a tip? Yeah. Well, I would say go in, if you're going to compete, go into it confident, you know, go into it thinking I'm coming back with a trophy. I'm coming back and I'm going to win, and we need to be ready for it. You know, and I think if you place top 10 in any of those events, you're going to get hit. You know, people are going to be like, oh, that's a number 10 in the world, number 8 in the world. You know, cause that's how people look at it. You know, people were coming in like, oh, you guys are second best pizza in the whole world. And I'd be like, well, stop, just pan pizza. You know, so I would kind of, you know, try to like lower their expectations before eating the pizza, just to be like, you know, yeah, we won second in the world at this competition. You know, but you can't have that pizza because we don't run that all the time.
Got it. Yeah. I appreciate the whole lowering the expectations, be humble about it, but then like put your best on the plate so that they feel like it was worth their trek into your restaurant.
Yeah.
You said you don't make it every time. The, was I understanding it correctly that you actually partnered with someone to make the mole sauce for that pizza?
Yeah, so the Hole Mole was a collaboration, whether willing or unwilling, with the La Cabanita, which is the local Oaxacan restaurant that makes the mole. Cool. You know, and we had it, and we were friends with the bartender, so he was able to source the mole for us. Nice. You know, but asking for a gallon at a time to run it as a special. You know, you go in there and you're like, hey, I need a gallon of this. And they're like, well, we need a little bit of lead time before you just roll up in here and get a gallon. So we don't run that pizza all the time. But I mean, my specialty is pizza. And I like to do fusion on pizza. And, you know, I wasn't going to do a deep dive into how complex a mole negro sauce or just any of the moles are. So I figured it was better to outsource that and get that from a really good provider.
All right. Well, before we do a deep dive on your other creations and a little bit about your background, just for folks listening, if they do want to try the Hole Mole pizza, when is the best time to do that? Is that like a season? Is that like just check your Instagram? When can folks try it?
Yeah, I would say just follow us on Instagram. We always announce what our specials are going to be, especially with something like the Hole Mole, where like people want to try it. It's probably one of our best-selling specials that we've ever ran. But it's really the duck confit that takes a long time to prep and batch out and have enough of that. So it's very time-consuming. So whenever we run it, we usually just run it for a week or a weekend, and it's here and then it's gone, and then it'll just come back when it comes back.
Okay, cool. So you're putting duck confit on a pizza. Mm-hmm. Like that seems fancy. Where did you get that idea, and maybe you can include that in as part of your background?
So I went to the Culinary Institute of America in Hyde Park, New York, right up the street from our restaurant, actually. So I'm trained classically in a whole bunch of different cuisines. We go from French to Italian to Mediterranean. I kind of got just like a very good surface in a lot of different cuisines. So I think that brings a lot to the table when you're talking about pizza and wanting to, do an Asian pizza or a Latin pizza or a Mediterranean pizza. I've got a bunch of different things in my head that I can pull from, just from going to culinary school and I think that was probably a smart choice for me.
I love to hear that. I've considered culinary school numerous times in my life, and I just have always wondered whether the high price tag was worth it. I mean, like, and just in like the grand scheme of things, it was like, I was looking it up right before the show, and I think it was like somewhere from 20 to 30 grand a year. Is that right? Somewhere along there?
At the culinary, it's probably 20 to 30 grand a semester.
A semester.
But I don't quote me because, I also spent 8 years in the army. I got to go for free. I couldn't tell you what a book cost there. And that's probably another big reason why I went and I chose to go to the Culinary Institute. It's one of the more prestigious institutions. And I was like, if I'm moving from military to culinary and I'm, 27, 28 years old, I don't have time or the desire really to go and come up in the restaurant industry for another 8 years. I kind of wanted to jumpstart it.
That's actually really interesting, and I think that's why a lot of people pay for school, is so you can jumpstart that. Like, if you feel like you're short on time, then just pay to get that education, and then you'll be ready in, how long was it, 2 years?
Yeah, it's maybe like an 18-month program, but I mean, okay. Like you said, with your hesitation to like, is it really worth the price tag? You get really what you put into it, with a lot of other things. You could go and self-teach yourself all of these things or travel and learn the same way. But when you're surrounded by some of the best people in the industry and a lot of my decision too was just the networking, the people that are now, alumni, whether it's famous alumni or just, really strong business alumni, that I now have a network of people I can reach out to, so I think that was another big decision.
Yeah, I think I saw on your Instagram you were sourcing some products from one of your alumni basically, I don't know if it was like a honey or like a cured meat, but I can see how that can help you. Like if there's a lot of people who graduated out of the CIA and like, if, you know, they try your pizza, they can shout you out, you know, let others know in their network about your pizza. So I can see the benefit in that for sure.
Yeah.
So you feel like you're still drawing from it today, and utilizing that skill for the most part?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, there's, we'll come up with a special in the kitchen and I'll think back to, you know, this sauce that we use in this class, or, you know, a dish that we made for this class. You know, and I'm constantly pulling things from my past and my present. And yeah, I think that's just food in general, whether culinary school helped with that or not. You know, I think that's just something that I do, is, you know, I'm just constantly remembering a good sauce or a good side or something that paired well with this that I can now put on a pizza. Or
gotcha. So from culinary school, did you go straight into pizza?
So when I was an Army recruiter out of Syracuse, I actually moonlit at a pizzeria. So I was working full time as a recruiter, and then I would go and work nights at a local pizzeria. Started as a dishwasher, which is kind of funny because a bunch of like 18, 19 year old kids are telling me what to do and throwing dishes at me, you know, so it was humbling. But I think it was a good place to start. You know, and I kind of slowly built my way up, you know, from fryer. And then I was like, look, my goal is to make pizzas and I want to open my own restaurant. I need to know what that's like. So eventually I became a manager, you know, and just kind of worked my way up through there. And then after I got out of the military, just went straight to culinary school with the goal and the mindset of opening my own pizzeria.
Hmm. Let's go back to that whole like 19 year olds telling you what to do. Was that hard?
Yeah, not, you know, it wasn't that hard because I knew what the end goal was. And I knew that, you know, I might be a dishwasher now, but a month from now, I'm not going to be a dishwasher. A month from now, I'm going to be making pizzas just as good as they are, because that's how hard I'm going to work and that's how hard I'm going to hustle. You know, it's just, for me, it was kind of fun, you know. And then I ended up helping to get one of the guys actually in the military. So it helped my Army side too. You know, so I think working with them, and, you know, you just, like any kitchen, you just build camaraderie. And I think in kitchens, more than a lot of places, age just really isn't a factor, you know?
Yeah.
You can be 19 and be a manager and you're bossing around 30 or 40 year olds. And it can be the other way around. And that's just how it is.
Fair. You just got to put your pride and ego aside in the kitchen, right?
Yeah.
Cool. So you were doing all this with the hopes that you were opening up a restaurant. When did you finally open up Hudson and Packard?
So 2019, early in the year, a buddy of mine and I sat down, and that was our goal, was to open a pizzeria in the Hudson Valley. So we sat down, put everything together, got everything we need on paper with the idea of starting initially as a pop-up, you know, a pop-up for us. Was a way for a couple of dudes who didn't have any money to like build a following, start on the cheaper end. And we ended up finding a great local like commercial kitchen with like a front of the house that you could rent. And we just threw a Monday night pop-up starting in September 2019. We ran that for a whole year every Monday. COVID kind of pulled the plug on a few of the events, but eventually we got back in there and we were just cooking for the hospitals and who, you know, for first responders, and we were making food for them. And eventually, we just went to a straight takeout on Monday nights. And then, you know, we were still feeding people through the pandemic until we opened our brick and mortar in October of 2020.
How is the volume on, I think you called it Motor City Mondays, right?
Yeah, Motown Mondays.
Motown Mondays. Yeah. I'm sorry.
Yeah, Motor City Mondays would have worked too. We probably, yeah, you know, if we sat down a little longer, we probably would have come up with that one too.
how is it on Motown Mondays?
Man, the first one or two were like, you know, we would sell maybe 50 pizzas, 60 pizzas. And we really based on what we could rent in the community kitchen and space available, we ended up capping it. We couldn't make more than 100 pizzas on a Monday. Oh. Which, you know, back then I was like, 100 pizzas, hell yeah. Like, you know, that's a 100 pizzas in 4 hours, because we only ran the pop-up from 4 to 8. First couple were cool, and then eventually it just caught on, and there'd be a line out the door. We would sell those 100 pizzas in 20 minutes and then spend an hour and a half trying to get them into the oven and feed people.
Wow. So basically it was hard. It was just like open, hit pizzas, and then bam, you're done.
Yeah. And I mean, we were working out of hotel pans on ice. You know, we didn't have any sort of like
refrigeration.
There weren't low boys with the prep table up top. It was hotel pans on ice. Yeah. We had a deck oven that, you know, had three decks, but half the time one of them wasn't working. They only got up to 500. So, you know, anyone in the pizza game knows that once you start opening an oven door, that temperature drops. And when you're doing Detroit's, you've got to have, you know, 525, 550, you know, you're up there. And when you're starting at 500, you're probably starting at like 490, 480. And then it, you know, it eventually just drops to like 425, and you're just like, pizzas are taking 30 minutes, 40 minutes. Gosh. You know, yeah. But I mean, people were waiting. They, you know, we put games on the tables. We tried to turn it into like a cool family night thing. And you know, people would come and they'd get them to go, or they'd just sit, listen to good, you know, Motown music and play games with the family, and they'd get their food eventually. And then once they were fed, you know, people, their attitudes change.
That's good. Yeah. I was going to ask you about two things. Let's start with the time. Like, so they would get there, wait in long ass line, and then place their order, and then most of them would just wait. Do you think some of them would come back, and it would take like 4 hours, like 3 to 4 hours to get their pizza if they were one of the last ones to order?
I mean, it would take probably, you know, at least half an hour to get everyone's order through, just to where we would have it. And then yeah, probably another hour and a half, 2 hours. Some people would probably were waiting till the end. And yeah, you know, you always get those people who are super impatient and don't understand the concept, or don't understand like the handicaps that you're working with, really. You know, and they throw attitude, and all you can do is just smile and, you know, give them customer service and try not to let it affect your night. But for the most part, 99% of the people understood that like we were doing something different and everybody wanted it. And, you know, just wait, be patient, and spend time with your family and talk, you know, put your phones down and wait for good food and just enjoy the moment.
And then ultimately it was worth it.
Yeah.
Now the hotel pans question. Wait, sorry. How long was your service? Was that 2 hours or 4 hours?
We would go from 4 to 8.
Okay, so 4 hours using hotel pans. I am currently using dough trays to put my ice underneath my toppings. Can you just like talk about how hard it is to like not have the right refrigeration? Like, it's a struggle, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, you got to work with what you got if you want to make your dreams come true. You know what I mean? You can't let a whole lot of things hold you back and push you in the wrong direction. But I mean, whole pans on, half the time shit's falling over. You're spilling ingredients into the ice water because things aren't, you know, like, you might have nine pans in a hotel, and the math is like, oh well, you can only fit 9 of these in there, they're gonna fit perfectly, but they don't. You know, so like toppings are going all over the place, you know. Yeah. Things aren't fully submerged in the ice, and you know, luckily, you know, from what I know, you know, you can hot hold or you can cold hold food for a certain amounts of time, and 4 hours was a pretty good window to where you're not running the risk of, you know, ingredients going bad, and mm-hmm. everything we were working with, you know, was cooked, you know, prior, or just like raw vegetables. We didn't, at that time, we weren't doing like a build your own. We just had, every week was four pizzas. You get one of these four. We don't modify anything, so we can get them out, you know, as quick as we can. You know, so most everything was like pickled pepperoni, cooked sausage, you know, cheese. And we were going through stuff so fast that, you know, we really only had them on ice just so if the health inspector came and was checking in on us, which he did, you know, maybe once the entire year. You know, but yeah, hotel pans and ice water are, it's fun, you know. It's looking
it works.
Yeah, looking back now, you're like, man, that's where we started, you know.
So this pop-up was widely successful for a one-day thing. People were coming back, people were lining up for hours, and then just to speed people up, the pandemic hit. That pop-up eventually ended, right? And then that's when you transitioned over to opening up your brick and mortar.
Yeah, when the pandemic hit and it was like really ripping through, the folks at the community kitchen didn't want anyone in there. You know, we you know, there was such little amount of information out there on COVID that like they were like, stay away from everyone, don't come in the building. You know, and eventually we reached back out to them and then we were like, you know, hey, can we come in if we're alone by ourselves, we're social distancing, and we're just making cheese and pepperoni pizzas for the hospitals, for police, for first responders. And eventually they let us in to do that.
Nice.
And then eventually it moved to where I think we were doing, maybe Friday, Saturday, Sunday, we were doing pop-ups, because no one else was utilizing the space. And we were like, look, we want to get in here. We want to like, we'll pay for the space. No one's paying for anything right now. Let us use the space. We'll just do carry out. We won't let anybody in the door. We'll bring the food out to them. So it moved from Motown Mondays to doing three nights a week, just takeout. At that point in time, we had already found a location. We already found an investor. And we were just trying to, you know, stay relevant, make a little bit of money, you know, and just kind of hone in on what we want to do while building out our space and then getting ready to open that. And we were just, you know, we didn't want a lot of time to lapse from pop-up ends to restaurant opens.
So minimizing that time in between so that you stay relevant, top of mind, that people continue to support you.
Yeah, I mean, especially in an environment where even when we open our brick and mortar, you can't have anybody come in, you know, like it's still, we were still under the restrictions of, you know, take out and carry out and delivery only. You know, so we knew going into it that, you know, we can't have people come in. We can't use the space the way we want to. So we ended up running, I think we ran that pop-up at the community kitchen through July, and then we stopped that to focus on opening up the brick and mortar, and we ended up opening that October 1st, 2020.
Wow, 2 years ago. So real quick though, before we, just one question about the community kitchen. Was it free prior to the pandemic?
No, so you had to pay like a small fee to become a member, and it was like an annual fee of probably like less than $100, maybe $100.
Oh, wow.
But then you would pay hourly to rent certain portions of the space, and you could pay for cold storage if you needed it, or dry storage, and there were different prices for everything. But I mean, you weren't paying the utility bill, you know, so you know, you were only paying really for what you used, plus your annual membership. And then if you weren't using anything, they would just get rid of you. You know, they would just tell you like, hey, you're not a member here anymore. You haven't been here in 6 months. And other people need the space. So, I mean, I think it was a great incubator for us. And, you know, I think that's their mission, is to help, you know, small businesses, you know, go from nothing to something and eventually move out of the space and grow into their own brick and mortar. So for us, you know, that's exactly what it did.
Got it. All right. Thanks for the clarification. Mm-hmm. Now the brick and mortar, were you building it out or were you taking over an existing space, existing pizzeria, and then kind of refurbishing everything? What was it like?
So I moved here in 2017, and the space that we took over from the moment I've been here has always been a pizzeria. So it started off as one pizzeria, then they left, and then it was vacant for, I want to say, like half a year. Nobody was in there. The block was dead. Nobody even like lived down the street. And then another pizzeria came in, and they were there for maybe 3 or 4 months. The building got sold. Thankfully, my investor was the one who purchased the building, showed it to us, and then we ended up taking over the space, doing the build out. You know, so we took, and I mean, it was ugly inside. I mean, I don't know who designed it the first time around, but it was like rose salmon colored pink walls with the ugliest marble countertop tiling you've ever seen. You know, we went in there with just, you know, tried to envision just a big white space and, you know, completely transformed it into what it is now. And, you know, that took a lot of time, and sourcing things through COVID was also very difficult. So getting materials in to build took longer than, you know, we wanted it to. And, you know, I was in there every day, chipping away, getting tile off the ground, trying to help with whatever I could. It was literally me and one other guy from a construction company that would come every day, and I would just be like, look, dude, you tell me what to do. I can swing a hammer. I know how to drill holes and screw things into walls. And, you know, I was like, you tell me what to do and I'm going to help you out. And we got it done.
Boss. I love that. Had you worked construction before? This was kind of just like, you know, I know some of the basics and
yeah, hell no. And I'll never do construction again. I'll tell you what, man, those dudes who do that are like legit men. I don't even feel like a dude. Like, I don't even feel like a man, when I stand next to those guys, you know, because like you go in and it's hot. There's like, you know, you're doing construction. So like there's no AC. They're not turning that stuff on for the construction workers. And I'm like dripping sweat trying to get tile off the ground. And I ended up popping one, and my forehead was cut open, bleeding all over the place. And I'm getting blisters all on my hands. And, you know, but I mean, I stuck it in there with them and I did the best I could. And I will say this though, they take a break, like, on the clock. They'll look at the clock and they'll be like, 9 o'clock, taking a break, you know, 12 o'clock, time to go to lunch. And like, they're punching in, they're punching out, and they're only there for what they need to be. And I remember the first time he like sat down, and we had only been there for maybe an hour and a half, 2 hours. And he's like, oh, it's breakfast. It's time for breakfast. And I was like, what do you mean it's time for breakfast? I was like, we gotta get this pizzeria open, man. We don't have time for that. And he was like, nah. He's like, nah. He's like, time to close down. Be back in the hour. But, you know, eventually I got used to that schedule, and I'd look at my watch and I'd be like, hey, Herman, time to go, man. Lunchtime. And we, you know, we'd both be out, and, you know, we got it done. It was fun. I think definitely it's helped me around just in the kitchen, you know, being able to fix this or fix that and not have to call somebody for every little problem. I think, you know,
yeah,
being a, that. You know, yeah. Being a part of building it out, I think makes me more proud also of like what it became and how it looks today.
Yeah. I'm taking a look in my garage right now, which we kind of converted into a room, and I did half of the work with a handyman. Yeah. And I definitely, you know, it's not perfect, but I definitely appreciate every little bit of it. And now when I've kind of built this extra skill where I can do stuff around the house, and, you know, I'm not 100% confident in it, but I can YouTube it and, yeah, and know that it's a matter of, you know, trying to learn it and then applying it. And yeah, you don't have to call someone over to fix some certain things. Obviously you do sometimes, like when it's out of your control or you don't have the time to do it, but yeah, no, you definitely get a different type of appreciation for that type of work.
Yeah, absolutely.
How long and how much was your build out, if you don't mind me asking?
So I think we started the build out probably April or May of 2020. Didn't open until October 1st, and we were probably there's probably still things we were doing on September 30th. So it took from April or May through the end of September to do everything that we had to do. And I mean, we ripped the floors up. We put new floors in. We had to do some work on the walls. We had to take out a whole countertop because we don't do slices, so we didn't need like a slice counter or anything like that. So the kitchen was a nightmare too. We popped all the tile out of there. We had to redo the entire subfloor. Getting old equipment out and making everything look brand new, and took a lot of time, and I think it was like $45,000, like on the nose. And the budget originally was 30,000, so we ended up going over 15. And if there's anything I can let people know is, however much you think you're gonna spend, just don't fall in love with that number. Don't be like, this is it, this is all we need to spend. You're gonna go over it, 9 times out of 10, and that's just how it's gonna be. And there's nothing you can do about it. During the build out, there was like every single decision that had to be made. I wanted to do something one way. And the builders were like, well, if we do it this way, this is how much it's going to cost. If we do it this way, it's going to cost this much. You can go over budget or you can not go over budget. And I always chose not going over budget, and I still went over budget. And I'll tell you, I was mad about the 15 grand at the end, but I mean, the space looked beautiful. You walk in and you don't feel like you're in just another pizzeria. You feel like you're in something different and something special. So the 15 was absolutely worth it, and I'd do it again.
Dope, dope, dope. On the note of finances, I asked you before we talked if you were comfortable sharing like how much your pizza makes or your pizzeria makes and operates. Would you be able to share that with us today?
I actually pulled up, because we're celebrating our 2-year anniversary. So I pulled up some numbers. Our first year, and I mean, we're going through COVID. We can only do, takeout, and we only do delivery on Grubhub. We don't have any sort of in-house delivery. Our dining room also, and I'm just trying to paint a picture because I don't know if our sales were good or they were horrible. So I want people to understand just kind of the environment that we're in.
Fair, I like that.
We're not in a big city. We're not down in New York City or Jersey or Long Island. We're just in Poughkeepsie, New York, Dutchess County. So it's a little bit of a smaller community. We can only fit like 25 people in our restaurant anyway. That first year, I think we did, our gross sales were 367,000. Which I mean, coming from a pop-up where you made, 20 grand in, 4 months to that, I was like, man, we're rich, dude. Like we're making a lot of money, man. But also to be fair, I don't ever like, yeah, gross sales are important, but the number I always go off of is how many pizzas did we sell? How many pizzas did we sell that night or this month? That's the number that I like to go over. And that first, I'll pull up the actual number, because I also think it's cool to like go back and look at like, oh, like what'd you do this year, what'd you do that year, and now 2 years in, we can kind of look up at that stuff. And that first year we sold, just a little over 18,000 pizzas. And that was the, 361,000 in gross sales. And then the year two that we just that we're celebrating now this month, we've had, I mean, we've grown 100% across the board on pretty much everything. Our gross sales this past year were 607,000. You know, so nearly doubling what we did last year. We sold 26,193 pizzas. And I'm proud of every single dollar. I'm proud of every single pizza. You know, yeah, you know, we're not grossing $1 million, but I try not to compare myself to the success of others. You know, we're only 2 years into this, you know, and we doubled last year. We're going to double again this year, and we're just going to keep growing until we need to find a bigger location or have two locations. You know, so another thing right now too is COVID changed everything, especially in the restaurant industry. Food costs are higher. Your labor costs are higher. People want to be paid more. And they should be. You know, we were one of the hardest working industries throughout the entire pandemic, and we never pumped the brakes. You know, it was go, go, go the whole time. You know, so people are getting paid more, food costs are up, you know, so you're not getting as much off the top as you used to as a pizzeria. You know, we get our number one complaint is how much our pizzas cost for the size that they are. You know, we only do the 8x10 Detroit style pizzas. But we always tell people that, you know, that's good enough to feed two normal people. I'm a bigger dude, and two slices of our pizza and I'm like, I'm good to go. If I eat a third one, I'm like, I've made a mistake. You know, so we tell people, you know, yeah, you're paying this much for the pizza, but it's feeding two people. You know, you're still sharing a meal with somebody. You know, and people don't understand also, like, everything we do is in-house. You know, we're not buying frozen goods. We're not storing stuff in a freezer. We're making food with our bare hands. And that takes time, and that takes labor, and we're purchasing or sourcing the highest quality ingredient that we can. And that costs money too, you know, and I think people are going to see this trend, especially with pizzerias, where you're not going to be able to get a $5, $10 extra large cheese pizza with a dozen of wings and 2 liters of Coke anymore. Like, that's not realistic. And when you do get those things, they're not going to taste very good. You know, and I think people are going to see that's the way the industry is moving. You know, you're not going to see those big deals anymore, because they're just harder, and you're not making money, or you're losing money on those things.
Hey, Pizza Pal. I just want to say thank you for listening to the show so far, and thank you for making it all the way here. Before we get on to the end of the show, I want to remind you all to please leave a rating on the podcast. You could do it right now. Just go ahead and click 5 stars if you're listening on Spotify or Apple. It will greatly help the show. I appreciate you so much. And if you're looking to buy an uni or a second uni, the affiliate link helps the show so, so much. So please use that anytime you're considering a new oven. All right. Enjoy the rest of the show. Yeah. You know, and maybe just the location, but like, I'm looking at your pizza for $18 to $23 for an 8x10 pizza. That's not bad at all. Mm-hmm. Like, here in the Bay Area, it's, you know, it's probably like $20 for a cheese for an 8x10. Mm-hmm. And so I think it's on par. I think, and when you tell folks that everything is, you know, made in house, like, hopefully they have that appreciation for it. Mm-hmm. And if they don't, they're just, you know, fact of the matter is they're not your customer. So move on.
Yeah. I mean, something I struggle with, and I probably will always struggle with this, is just the opinions of other people. And we, as chefs and pizzaiolos and people in the food industry, we put ourselves out there and we make food for people every day. And I think that's such a personal thing that we do on a daily basis. When you make food for someone, it's basically you on a plate and you're giving that to somebody, and they're either going to love it or they're going to not love it or they're going to shit on it. So you know, when people come and they give you a negative review or they give you negative feedback, you know, you got to roll with the punches on that. And, you know, especially with something with pricing and people come, you know, like, hey, the pizza was really good, but a little expensive. Well, it's okay. Well, it wouldn't be really, really good if it was cheaper, you know, like,
yeah,
we wouldn't be using the same stuff. You know, so you just gotta do what makes you happy. Like when I own a restaurant and I own a pizzeria, I'm not cooking food that other people will like. I'm cooking food that I like and I hope other people will like. And we've definitely found our tribe, and I've gotten to a point where I can see somebody come in and I know, like, that's not our tribe. Like, this person's gonna, they're gonna look at the menu and then they're gonna walk, they're not gonna stay. Or they're, you know, I can look and I can read people really well. You know, you learn to do that when you're constantly looking out of the kitchen and you're watching people take their first bite and you're watching people slam a whole pizza because they love it so much. Or you learn that, and you, as a restaurant, you're gonna find your people, you're gonna find your tribe, and that's who you're doing what you do for every day. And everyone else who's not part of that tribe does not matter.
Oh, that was strong words, man. I love that, though. You're absolutely right. I think more and more we just gotta find the people who will support us and focus on them and finding more people like them.
Mm-hmm.
On the note of finding your tribe, I mean, like, I don't have a point of reference if, you know, and I don't have the full story either, but, you know, 600,000 in sales seems like a healthy amount to me. Or even, you know, 300,000 your first year. How did you get that? Do you think... And how did you get that many people to support your business? Do you think that it came from the pop-up? Do you do any sort of other advertising? Do you think it's all word of mouth, Instagram? What is it?
I think starting with the pop-up was a very smart choice for us. I think that definitely built a lot of buzz, you know, got people talking about us. We are also in the heart of New York. We're an hour and a half train ride away from the city. People know pizza, but they only know pizza one way. You walk into any pizzeria around here blindfolded and you're in the same place. You know, so I think it also helped us to do something different, to come out and have something so different that people don't even recognize the shape as pizza, you know, like, that definitely helped us, you know, so people aren't just talking about how good the pizza is, but they're also talking about how different it is. And you can't get it anywhere around here the way we do it, you know, and it's been 2 years. And now there's a couple of other places that are starting to do Detroit style pizza. You know, and I know that they know who we are. I know that they follow us. And I know that they wouldn't be doing Detroit style pizza if we did not exist here. So I think word of mouth has definitely helped us a lot. And it comes back to Pizza Expo. I think we saw such an amazing level of growth the 3 or 4 months after Pizza Expo. And people are still coming in today going like, oh, I heard you guys are second best in the world. Like, I came from the city. You know, I'm from Brooklyn. I'm from Queens, or I live in Manhattan, and I came up here to try your pizza because I heard about it on the radio. And you know, we, in terms of followers, you know, we probably gained 1,500, 2,000 local followers, you know, just from placing second in Pizza Expo. And it almost makes me hesitant to want to go back and compete, you know, because there's two sides to that coin too. You know, like, what if I place if I place lower than second, now we've gone down, and if I place first, everything is, it's going to be tenfold what it was when we placed second, you know. So it's word of mouth, putting yourself out there. Those things are all going to draw people's attentions. Also, you know, radio, local radios and local news always want to write and talk about something new. So my advice is to reach out to those people. We didn't necessarily wait for things to catch on to a point where radios were contacting us, news was contacting us. You know, we would reach out to them and say, hey, this is what we're doing. I'm a local Army veteran, culinary grad. You know, this is my story. This is what we're doing. Maybe we should talk about this. And 9 times out of 10, they're going to be like, yeah, we're looking for a story. We'd love to talk. We'd love to write up an article. We'd love to come and take some photos and try the food. So those things helped a lot too. And this past year, we definitely also moved towards hiring, you know, someone to run our social media. So that's something we do now too, where, you know, we have someone who comes out once a month and takes pictures and makes sure that we're staying current on social media, you know, because that's such a big market now. And people's attention spans are short, so they want video and they want audio and they want to hear things and see things. And running a business, you don't have time to run the business, make the pizza, and then hop on social media and post all the time, you know. So for us, it was just smart to hire out too.
I feel that. Just on the social media thing, I think we've talked about it in the past, but I want folks to hear it, like, because this could be a valuable lesson to them. But how much do you pay for that social media person, and how did you find them?
So we basically advertised the desire to have someone run our social medias on our own social media. So people were recommending friends or family, or, hey, you know, it was other local businesses who go, this is what we do, this is who we use. It's never cheap. You know, we weren't getting like, hey, we'll come do it for $20, you know, or hey, we'll come take pictures for free food. You know, and we went through a list of candidates, and I met with a couple of people, and some people, you know, wanted a lot more. Some people wanted a little less. And most of these people also have, like, you know, who do it for a career and this is what they do to make money, have different packages and different structures, and they can do a lot more than what we have, and they can do a lot less. And we ended up coming to a good common ground on what we actually hired for. And what we pay is $1,000 a month. And that gets her to come out, take photos once a month. She posts 5 times a week to the story on Instagram. She posts on Facebook. She responds to customers. She forwards messages to us that we need our attention on. You know, so she basically takes away a huge weight off my shoulders, which is probably more than, you know, it's worth more than $1,000 a month. But we also don't pay any sort of radio advertising. We don't pay for magazine ads. That's what we pay for. So when, in terms of advertising budget, you know, we pay that $1,000 a month, and that's what we pay for. You know, we're not paying for ads. We're not running anything else. It's her, she comes in, she does her thing, and it works for us.
Do you find that social media attracts new customers locally, or do you find that it's like a tool to show that you're relevant for people who want to know more about you?
I think it's both. I think there's definitely Instagrams and social medias for restaurants where a lot of their followers are probably people from all around the world, or all around the country at the very least. And you look and you're like, man, how do we get to 100,000 followers, or how do we get to 25,000 followers? But I think we focus on local growth. So I don't care if I get that follower from California or that follower from Michigan to support on a Detroit, you know, based, you know, local. I care if I get that Hudson Valley follower or that guy that lives in Connecticut or, you know, someone who's going to follow and be like, we're going to make it out there someday. And then they come and they spend money in my business and they continue to follow and interact with our Instagram. But if you talk to our social media handler, it's all about the algorithm. It's all about your hashtags and who you're really focusing on. And, you know, we try to tag the local colleges in the area. We try to tag the local cities that are surrounding Dutchess County. You know, so we really just try to focus our growth on Hudson Valley residents and the surrounding communities.
I love that. Like, what good is 100,000 followers if none of them are going to spend money on your business?
Yeah.
And another tip to that, I'm sure your social media person does it, but like tag all the influencers and yep. have them drool over your pizza so they can yeah. come and share it.
Yeah, I would we tag Guy Fieri all the time. You know, we're still waiting for him to come out. We leave Gordon Ramsay out of it because we don't want him to come through and start talking shit. You know, but yeah, we're tagging all the big CIA alumni, and you know, we're tagging the influencers, and you know, we definitely get people who reach out all the time and want to collaborate, and you know, it's definitely moving in the right direction.
Cool. Now, I don't think we're going to have time to do the deep dive on Detroit, like, but I will ask you about Detroit style pizza, mm-hmm. Just because that is your specialty. What is the secret to a good Frico crust?
The secret, is just love, dude. It's putting your hands on it, you know, like everybody wants to talk about, you know, we did a 96 hour cold ferment and we did this and it's 2000% hydrated. And, you know, like people are just coming up with crazy things. And I think it was an article I read from Peter Reinhardt too, who said, like, the dough process doesn't have to be super complicated, but there are steps that you can implement in your process that are going to make the outcome better. You know, and there's also, you know, the 12 or whatever steps there are to artisanal baking that artisanal bakers follow, where you're implementing some sort of autolysis and you're implementing folds and stretches and fermentations and you're retarding the dough and you're doing these things and we implement those steps. You know, but we stick to tradition on what Detroit style pizza was. And, you know, I don't have anything against people who par bake. I know that there are tons of pizzerias who par bake, and have phenomenal pizza and world-class pizza. You know, but that's not what we do. And I think the way we do it, you know, people tell us all the time, they're like, man, this, you know, looks super heavy, but then you pick it up and it's light and you bite into it and it's got some chew and it's got the crunch on the outside and it feels like you're biting into a cloud. And I can't remember who said it, but I remember hearing it from Chris Decker, who said, a good Sicilian or a good pan pizza, looks like a brick, but it's light as a feather. Yeah. So I think that is what everyone is striving for in these Detroit pizzas. And I think the really high cheese Frico crust walls are really cool and they look great for Instagram and you guys are taking beautiful pictures with them. But we mess around with it sometimes in the kitchen and it's not, you know, it's such a hard thing to achieve for just a photo. And then people come in and they expect it and they want it to look like that, but it's just not realistic to churn out 250 on a Friday night and have them all look like that. So I think the way we do it is designed for consistently having a really awesome, great tasting product. And I, you know, we spend every morning, I'm spending 3 to 5 hours of my day right off the bat just making dough. And there's no way around it. There's no shortcut that I'm willing to take to cut some time off of it. At least now, you know, because the product that we have every single day in my restaurant is a top-notch crust. And I think if you don't have that, you don't have a pizzeria. You know, it doesn't matter what you put on top of it. If the bottom is shit, you know, you don't have anything.
Damn. I appreciate that, man. Like, I really do appreciate a direct dough Detroit. I don't like the way Parbakes peel off. I just haven't figured out a good recipe yet with sourdough to go direct, because I feel like maybe my toppings are too heavy, but I'm not getting that oven spring. Mm-hmm. Or maybe I just haven't messed around with it too much.
Well, I also, like, I don't know if necessarily every time you bite into a Detroit pizza, you need to come away and look at it and go, man, look at that crumb structure. You know, I don't think every bite is going to look like that. You've definitely got pizzas that are a little heavier on the toppings that, you know, your pizzas aren't going to rise as high and they're not going to spring, but that crumb and that chew is still going to be consistent across the board. But is it going to be that pizza that you want to take to Expo and show off? And is that going to be the one that you cut in half and then look at the crumb structure and post that one to Instagram? Probably not. You know, when it came to Expo, I was like, well, I want the crumb structure to stand out, you know? So I was like, I'm baking a pizza with one or two toppings on it, maybe. So it gets the oven spring and it rises and the crumb can open up and look the way it does on these beautiful cheese pizzas that we always do. Cause I didn't want anything weighing it down, but, you know, as long as you don't have a gum line and your dough's not soggy or, raw in the center, then you've cooked a great pizza. You know, it's not always gonna rise and be super high and 2 inches thick and be open and air. You know, it's not always gonna be the Instagram picture.
Respect, but at the end of the day, it still tastes bomb.
Yeah,
right?
Absolutely.
Very cool. Let's start to wrap things up here. I always ask my guests these final two questions. Feel free to take your time. What is one mistake in pizza, business, or life that people can avoid?
You know, I kind of touched on it earlier. You're going to make mistakes. You're going to fumble. You're going to wake up and you're going to miss this or you're going to miss that. A couple of months ago, it was the middle of the summer. Where we make dough is not ideal for dough production year round. There's maybe like 3 or 4 months where it's the perfect temperature. And it was a Saturday. I had 70 dough to start and I made another batch of 130 or whatever to get through a Saturday for us. And my timer went off. I was pulling pieces out of the oven. I'm sure you know where this is going. And I completely forgot about the dough in the basement. It was probably an hour had gone by from my timer going off to where I went downstairs. It clicked and I was like, shit. I was like, I forgot the dough downstairs and it's not, there's no way it's going to be good. And it wasn't. We had to close early. I had to pull 130 dough out of a pan. I probably went and cried in a corner somewhere and felt like a failure. And you're going to have those days. You're going to have days that are worse than that. But the mistake you're going to make is letting those scare you from going after what you want to achieve in life, whether that's in business or pizza or whatever your dream is. Jump. You got to take the risk. You got to jump. You got to believe in yourself. And even when you don't believe in yourself, believe in the self that does believe in yourself to get the other self who doesn't through these times. It's going to be hard. There's going to be times where you don't have, for me at least, we started with nothing. We didn't have any money. You know, I still probably don't pay myself what I should. You know, and there's going to be times where you're broke. You had a slow week. You're wondering where the customers are. Did you make the right choice? Did you invest your time and your energy in the right thing? And you just have to keep going. I think that's what separates people who are successful from people who aren't successful, or people who are just working a 9-to-5 for somebody else. You got to put yourself in this mentality that as a business owner and somebody who wants to go out and get after it on their own, you're going to make mistakes, and you have to accept that. And you have to, you know, you have to learn from the failures as much as you do from the successes. And that's my, take on it. That's my advice on the biggest mistake you can make is not making the mistakes and not taking the leap, you know?
Seriously. Well, freaking said. I love the spin you put on that answer, and it speaks a lot to me. So thank you for sharing.
Yeah. I mean, I was 8 years in the military, and I was getting to that point where if I stayed in any longer, it was going to be a career, and I was going to spend 20 years doing something that I would be proud of, but I wouldn't necessarily be happy. Am I happy every day in the restaurant? Hell no. Are there days where I'm not dog tired and exhausted more than I've ever been in my life? Absolutely. But I took a look in the mirror and I said, do I want my life to go this way, or do I want my life to go that way? And when I chose that I wanted to go that way, every decision that I made from there on out was to get my life to that point. Is it where I want it to be yet? No. Do I have multiple locations? Am I out of the restaurant at least 3 or 4 nights a week? Not yet. But those are more goals that I have. You know, that's my process is still taking place. My journey is still going. You know, but I'm making the right decisions, you know, and I know that I'm going to fail more. I know that things are going to get hard, and you know, who knows what things are going to look like 6 months or a year from now, but my goal is always going to be owning a pizzeria, whether that's 1 or 10 or 100, that's what it is. And there's nothing that's going to stand in my way. There's no one or anything. And that's how I'm going to live my life. And that's it.
I love it. Seriously, you're speaking to me right now, because I am at that point where I'm about to hit 8 years with my job. I am searching every day for the next thing. I'm putting more and more thought into what I'm going to do next. But it really is about just finding, aligning yourself with your goals and making the right moves to make sure that you're in alignment with that. So thank you for sharing that.
Well, what are you trying to do next?
You know, that's a great question. And I've always had this goal of getting paid to eat like that. I want to say that I eat for a living. And, you know, part of me thought that opening up a restaurant would get me there. Part of me thought that creating content would get me there. Starting a podcast would get me there. And I'm still trying to figure out how that lines up with my goal. Part of me just says, just start going for it and start reviewing food and eating food. And eventually, if I get good enough, I could get paid for it. But even if I didn't get paid for it, at least I would get some fulfillment. I would still need money to pay for said food. So I'm trying to figure out. But what I do know is that the job that I'm currently at right now, the only thing that it's serving is the fact that we have a roof over our head and that we have health insurance to utilize for my baby to come. And so far, you know, we've had a couple hospital trips and I'm like, yeah, thank God I have this job. Mm-hmm. But at, also at the end of the day, it's like, dude, I'm not going to make this a career. I know I'm not, and I know I'm not going to be happy doing it. So I need to make those moves.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you've already got a fan base. You've already got your podcast. You know, maybe the next step for you is to just get your blog going, you know, go eat, write about it, and you're going to find your tribe. You know, you've already got it. Now you just got to build it.
Thank you. Yeah. Slow steps, but brick by brick, I'll get there. And you've enlightened me a lot on this show. We didn't get to talk about how much you take home. You just reminded me. But don't worry. I think people can kind of guess, or would you want to share that? How much do you take home?
I pay myself right now $11.50 a week. But I am also the first person to not take a paycheck. Your restaurant and your employees always eat first. And that is the life of a leader, a business owner. That's, you know, when it comes to owning a business or a restaurant, you know, there are things that come before the business owner. And yeah, maybe when you make some profit and you can take more at the end of the year. But when you're going through the year, man, you take as little as you can, and you take care of your employees and your restaurant first. And then if those things are taken care of, then the rest should fall into place, and then you will be able to earn a living off of what you're doing.
I love it. You have been so gracious with your time. I apologize for going over, you hooked me. What do you want to leave the audience with today?
I don't know. I think we've talked about some pretty helpful things. You know, I hope I've enlightened not only you, but, you know, someone out there listening, and hopefully I've inspired someone to really start focusing on a dream or getting after something that they've always wanted to put some time into. You know, so I think if I could leave everyone with one thing, you know, I've already said it, you know, it's just believe in yourself more than anyone ever will, you know. Like, I remember listening to a clip from Will Smith, and I love Will Smith, even though we slapped Chris Rock, still love him. He said, no one is ever going to give you a fucking thing. No one's ever going to believe in you the way you need to believe in yourself. And it takes you to do some crazy stuff and put some crazy time and hours in before anyone's going to look at you and go, I want to invest some time and some money into this guy, you know, or this girl. You know, so you've got to put time and effort into something past a point that anyone else is ever going to before people are ever going to look at you and believe in what you think it is that you're trying to do. So, you know, keep your head up or keep your head down and just keep moving forward. You know, put one foot in front of the other. People are always saying it. When the times are hard, you push even harder, and you just keep going until you get to where it is you want to be.
I can't wait to have you back on the show, Charlie. You've inspired me for sure. And I'm sure you've inspired others listening too. Thank you so much for being on. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, Idra, thank you from the bottom of my heart. We appreciate it. I'm going to just shout out Brandon because I know he's going to be listening to this podcast because he's the one who told me I need to be on it. And Jasmine and everyone else from the restaurant, you know, and my family, you know. So, you know, we're doing big things around podcasts and shit now. So, yeah, that's awesome. Idriff, I appreciate it. And hopefully we'll see you at Expo.